Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be with you today.
Very good.
Why does everybody look at me like I don't?
You're the host of the show, Ben.
Ah, shoot. No, that's fair enough. That's a good point. All right. Anyway, hey, here's what we got going on the show tonight. First of all, Mike's got some Pope style advice. Mike, preview on the Pope style.
I call it how to say no.
That's your clever title?
Yeah.
I love it.
Actually, there's not a lot of content to it, to be honest with you. I spend all the time on that title.
Okay, I think that's fair. All right, so there's How to Say No by Mike Foose. Also, there was an article that...
Hey, hold on. Are you mocking me?
No. That seems legit.
All right, continue.
Okay. So we were going to... There's an article from Relevant Magazine called...
I feel like you're mocking me.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to agree with Mike. I think you're mocking him.
I'm trying to be supportive.
Okay, continue. Article on whatever whiz-bang you were saying.
Yeah, okay. All right. So from Relevant Magazine, there was an article called Don't Isolate Yourself in Christian Cliques, Why You Should Get to Know People Who Believe Differently Than You. And so we're going to try to tackle that one. And see, I don't know. There's a bunch of that Relevant Magazine always has these real hip-looking people on there. There's one lady with some plaid and a ponytail. There's a hip dude drinking Joe and a stocking hat, full beard. And then there's a guy who looks like he's not hip enough to be in a motorcycle gang, but he might like ride a bicycle behind a motorcycle gang.
Yeah.
Anyway. And they're all looking at something going on across the street. So I feel like this applies to us.
Hmm.
Same people are also used in the article, 5 practices we need to bring back in our lives. We're going to read that one.
All right. They're linked.
All right. And then we have some advice on Dear Life in the Path. And I think that's what's going on. Hey, heads up, man. Next week, it's time to clear the calendar, boys. I don't know how far ahead you plan, but next week, Silverside is going to be in the studio. Mike, confirmed?
Yeah, they're coming in.
This is still happening?
As far as I know.
Okay, good. All right, there's a 90% chance Silverside is going to be in studio.
I'm pretty excited about it.
So if you don't remember, like, they've been on the show a few times before. They're one of my favorite groups of guests. And they always have pretty cool stories from the road, cool stuff what's going on in their lives, in playing music, getting in front of people who really need to hear about the truth and love of Jesus. And you can pick up their new album. Mike, what are your thoughts on it?
I listened to the whole thing. In fact, I downloaded the whole thing, and it's pretty solid. In fact, they have this one tune that Laura did where it's they took a voicemail of their mom.
Yeah.
Their mom passed away, and then they took like the last one of the voicemails that she had from her on her phone and used it for the opening part of the tune, and then it starts rocking. The whole album is really good. That one in particular is pretty excellent.
Wow. Yeah.
Sweet. And if you remember, the last time they were in, you can go check out previous performances that they've done. They've been very, very gracious with us. They did some acoustic performances, which is not something that they normally do, and they've done that on the show. And the last time they were in, they brought in those guys who sang Hallelujah, did a really cool version of Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, you can go check all that stuff on the website. Go to lifeinthepath.org. You can hear past interviews with Silverside and some of their performances. I'm looking forward to it, you guys. Make sure you can set aside. If you can catch it live, it'd be cool so you can be part of the chat stuff. If not, make sure you podcast that beast or watch it later on YouTube. Before we go and ruin it, I will our friends. So and all kinds of stuff. Document on Altoona.
See when he was very, very cool about the whole thing.
Our team.com and up with Bob if you're home. He's just the guy to do it. He knows in the Des Moines, the peripheral city. Him and his team are just do. For the houses and stuff that I've looked at, his team has just always been very, very gracious. So, Bob, John, Bill, give those guys a call. Hey, even if you don't know whether you're in the market, he's a good guy to talk to as to whether you should be.
Yeah.
And so go to the EisenhowerTeam.com. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to Westfield Vet Hospital PetCareNeeds.com for all your pet care needs. It's still the cusp of spring, boys. You can still get your pets in for all the necessary shots and things to keep the ticks away.
Yep, it's Lyme disease season is what you got to be looking out for.
Did the dogs get the Lyme disease?
Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
Shoot, man.
Lyme disease, Bordetella, you don't want those things.
Isn't that a pasta?
What, Bordetella?
Bordetella and cream sauce, isn't that a pasta?
Yeah, my dog had that once. It was nasty.
Because it's poorly made pasta or it's actually a disease?
No, pasta, like, drips off the dog. It's disgusting.
No. That's fair enough. All right, so we're going to go to Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Hey, you can even set that thing up online, you lazy bones. It's 10 o'clock at night, and you think to yourself, I really should do this. You can do it right now.
Yeah.
WestfieldVetHospital.com. Get it set up. They're awesome to deal with. It's where I take my pets. It's where Mike takes his. They've been dealing with this pirate cat, the one-eyed...
One-eyed Mabel.
One-eyed Mabel. So anyway, they're the place to go. Make sure you hook up with those folks.
Hey, have you ever heard that song, the Need to Breathe song called Able? Where he's like, I'm not able.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I can't stop singing it when I see that one-eyed Mabel cat, except for I change Able to Mabel. And then, it's just a side note.
It's not a classic anecdote.
It's not.
Breathe, though. Hey, you should pick up their Live from the Woods album. They did an album, Live from the Woods, and there's a song called Difference Maker. It's just awesome. It's an awesome tune. So anyway, my throw out there for the month. If you got the Spotify, stream that beast. Otherwise, it's worth 99 cents or whatever they charge you for it. Pick it up. There's an album version, like a studio album, and then a live version, Live from the Woods. Pick up the Live from the Woods version. It's really, really good. And that's number four called Difference Maker. Excellent. All right. So let's check out this article here. Herrick sent this over. It's called Don't Isolate Yourself in Christian Cliques. It says, a few months ago, I started a new job in New York. I've begun to make some great relationships with my coworkers. I'm developing a new skill set. Okay, I'm a barista, but it's actually pretty hard to be a good barista here. And I'm finally settled in my new home. But I have to confess something. Until about a week ago, I've been hiding the fact that I was a Christian. You see, in my progressive, rational mind, I had decided that I wanted my coworkers to get to know the real me. Several of them are gay, a group many Christians have been unkind to. Another has clearly harbored bitterness against Bible Belt rhetoric, which has at times been heavy on the condemnation and light on empathy. I didn't want my coworkers to let me in with hurtful, narrow-minded people before they got to know the compassionate, open-minded person I believe myself to be. Right? It's in italics. Did I represent it correctly? Is it right?
That's how I would say it.
Okay, good. Theoretically, I can sleep well with that kind of thinking. But when I finally explained to my coworker one day why I don't work the Sunday morning shift, mentioning that I'm usually at church, I understood why I'd been resisting for so long. As soon as they knew I was a Christian, I felt that my behavior would be held to a different standard. Huh, he's a Christian, but he does XYZ. Oh, here he comes. I swear a lot. Okay. I'm not one to close.
Right?
I am not one to close my bar tab too quickly, and I've even gasped, looked at porn before. I'm a blissfully imperfect person, and for the most part, I find myself daily seeking the Lord for help with those myriad imperfections. This has never been a problem for me and my friendships because my close friends have always been other Christians. I can bare my soul with a great deal of vulnerability because they get it, also in quotes. But now I've run into this challenge where I'm not in the throes of my 16 years of Christian education, pre-K through college, kindergarten twice, and it was an age thing, and most of the people who I'm in a position to become close friends with are not Christians. All this time I've been assuming that that will open me up to a world of criticism, misunderstanding, and a lack of grace. In my Christian friendships, there's always been real wonderful grace and an understanding that we fall short, but the Lord is sufficient. There's even the freedom to write and speak sentences like that last one, rife with Christianese without the need for translation. The temptation I've faced is to throw myself into my church community, become friends with a bunch of other believers, and then minister to a couple of co-workers that I get to get sort of close with. For the first time in my life, though, the thought of that makes me uncomfortable. It feels wrong. It feels too easy. So there's more to this article. Let's stop there. What are your thoughts so far? Like, Herrick, what jumped out at you in this article?
It's something that kind of resonated with me just because I've very much valued growing up the friendships that I had with people really who were either outside the church or maybe belonged to a different church or really had no church background whatsoever. Whereas I myself came very much from a church background. But those friendships were very valuable to me because they helped to give me more perspective. It helped me to, among other things, kind of filter through some of the rhetoric that church was giving me just to sort of weigh some of the pros and cons, and I was able to see what are some of the things that the church is saying that has some real substance to it, and what are some of the messages that I'm getting from church that not so much.
Right.
And being able to have friendships who with people who just think differently than me and have very different perspectives. It was just a very valuable thing for me. And I see that kind of our society is tending more towards people just hanging out with people that think like them. And that's kind of scary to me because now the person next to me. And it understand what God is like. All we're ever doing is learning about either my perspective, people agree with me.
Well, that's a good point, right? Like, if God sees the whole world and that's his perspective, it cannot be implicitly more valuable for us to only work under a narrow perspective. Mm-hmm. Of which we only know the culture of which, you know, those, if Jesus walked in a world where people didn't follow him and we are not walking in a similar world, then we're not sharing with his eyes. And as often as we may pray for his eyes to see people the way he sees them, that's very difficult to have that full perspective for otherwise not participating in it. Mm-hmm. That's a good plot. And Mike, this reminded me of something that we've been talking about lately is it's like some of the stuff that you grow up in the church knowing or being told that like you're not sure even where it comes from. And I suppose without that exposure, if you're always around people who believe the same things you believe, you never, it's possible that you don't get to the root of understanding where your beliefs even came from or how, or what they're filtered through.
Yeah, because I've been going through this quite a bit over the last couple of weeks because me and the wife were on a fast, you know, and I spent a majority of my time with people who aren't Christians I ended up having to explain some of my behavior because it's just straight up odd, you know, when you're ordering weird stuff off the menu and they, you know, no, you're like, I'm not going to go out this time or there's free pizza. And I'm like, no, thank you. And so it's funny how different church Jesus and street Jesus are like, and it's kind of hard to explain, but like some of the stuff where if I came up to you guys and I'm like, listen, I'm not going to go with you. I'm on a fast. You guys be like, okay, sounds good. You know, and then that's the end of it. But it to a couple guys, you know, what a fast is. And I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, after my ex doing it, and I is that I have these and for. You just want to have good self. And I'm like, okay, you know, like, I said this thing, and I thought, I can continue eating what appears to be an all tomato salad, and we can stop talking about this now, I guess, then that's good enough, you know? But, like, I realized, like, I always knew that there was a gap, right? But like, I didn't understand the functionality of church Jesus are, and I think this talk.
Okay, all right. Let's continue with the article. So he says, "Fear makes it easy to assume the worst. I've concluded that up until recently, I didn't even realize you could be close, intimate friends with someone who wasn't a Christian. Sure, you could have a non-believing friend." Or two, but the goal was that they'd hang around your Christian friend group until they became Christians too. There are easy justifications for this kind of behavior. I know them well. They are the lies that I've come to believe through a very selfish, unbiblical view of relationships. I've been so focused on myself, protecting myself, and how people might view me, that I was missing the opportunity to be a good friend to someone just because they might disagree with me about some beliefs that I hold dear. I'd been assuming I knew that what someone thought before I even took the time to get to know them. I had this paralyzing fear of being criticized and judged by my non-Christian co-workers. But who am I to say how someone is going to think and act toward me if I'm not even their real friend? I was the judgmental critic, acting like I knew who they were and how their minds worked before we had a relationship with any sort of depth. Step outside the fear that we're ostracizing others and, more importantly, ourselves with our faith. We have to get outside of our safe Christian cliques and be vulnerable with people who don't know Jesus, or else we'll continue to perpetuate the lie that we think we're somehow inherently better humans, that we can't be real friends with the sinners. I'm not sure that's where it comes from. I've come to know some remarkable people at work and beyond who believe very different things from me, but who I would now call my dear friends. I trust them with secret parts of my life that I don't trust with everyone else. I can ask them for advice without fear of judgment, and I can walk through life with them, loving them the way that God does, hopefully being a good friend along the way. Yes, these sort of relationships come easier between Christians because we can skip a few steps in the hard work of learning the depths of each other's hearts. But that does not mean we have an excuse to shy away from creating meaningful friendships with people who do not have a relationship with the Lord. Wait. Are you thinking about that correctly? Has he categorized it correctly?
It sounds like he's made the step between being open and vulnerable exploring deep, meaningful relationships with Christians and Christians only, and now it seems like he's actually willing to expose his heart to people outside the faith and be able to just say, hey, here's who I am, here's everything about me, I'm going to let you in on even some of the darkest corners, and I'm just going to be open and honest with people who may not share his overall belief structure, and yet he's still willing to be vulnerable with them.
Is that important?
I think so.
Okay, why?
Jesus did. I mean, he was incredibly vulnerable himself with, with his disciples, with just people from Earth, and it doesn't get much more different than God and people from Earth.
That's right. So. You have an implicit disparity between the guy who created you and the creation itself, and so when Jesus is in that realm, okay, I can buy that.
But where has the people of the church learn to have fake relationships? I mean, it sounds like he's afraid. He's had these fake relationships his whole life, and now he finally has the freedom to be real or something. I'm like, well, shouldn't you just always just be who you are? I mean, I'm kind of having a hard time relating to what he's saying.
Is it to how he got here? It's like, well, why this was the issue to begin with?
Well, like he intentionally had to think, okay, I'm going to say I'm a Christian because they're going to think all these terrible things. And just say you are or aren't. Why can't you live Jesus? And I think that's kind of where he's getting to the conclusion, isn't it? If I understood him correctly.
So I wonder if that's kind of what Mike was talking about, though. That like that there does seem to be a disparity between what would other my Christian friendships and non, like I don't have any reason to make a distinction between those as to who I am or what I do. But I think maybe what Mike's saying is that perhaps. There is a bigger disparity there than I think what we realize. Like the thing is the thing that he was concerned about doesn't happen. Is that a realistic fear, or is that something that the church created? Have we created the thought that because of how we've talked about people who are not in the faith, it creates this chasm that makes it sound like there's something less than people. There's something that there are people that might have like just as some of the people that speak on behalf or claim to speak on behalf of Jesus. Don't necessarily echo Jesus are the people who will otherwise would look at Christianity and have a negative reaction to that or judgment to that don't speak on a giant group of people like that. And so like, have we permitted at some points to allow this concern about what people think of Christians to keep us from being actual people with other people? And I think maybe that's what he's speaking to.
And maybe it's just this desire we have to tell everybody to, you know, I don't like what you're doing, you know, you're using bad language. You should stop that. Well, why? I mean, they're not followers of Christ. Why should they? Why am I trying to get you to act like someone you're not? And maybe that's it. That he's got that inner guilt of I'm spent my whole life telling for no reason.
But it's not always that though. It's yeah. Like I mean, styles of Christ followers else's. And it's or not. For example, if you're hanging out and they decide they're going to go out, and like you're the one guy that doesn't want to go and says that, you know, I'm just going to skip on that. And they're going to say why. And you say, it's just not for me, right? Well, they're not fools. You know, there's an implicit judgment on that you're not going to go. And so now that, like, without you saying, hey, I don't think you should do that, or hey, that kind of entertainment is just not for me. They're thinking, you think differently of us, Mr. I'm not going to go. You know what I'm saying? The point of view. I don't know who is, right? But what follows, you know, you're going to pass on a judgment when you do things that they do. And that is going to happen whether it came out of your mouth or not.
Well, true. I suppose it's going to be revealed. Like, if you're taking a narrow road and everyone else is walking a wide one, they're going to see that, right? It's going to come through. But I wonder if we have otherwise approached some of those. Well, it doesn't mean you don't interact with other people that are walking, I guess.
No, but, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that at all.
That difference in lifestyle isn't something that's really going to offend people until you start getting in their face and saying, "Hey, you need to, you know, change your lifestyle," and yeah. I'm no longer.
I find that to not be true, what you just said.
Okay, so you
my
just
experience
by...
is that it does.
Okay.
Whether you do it intentionally or not, it just gets there. Like through, I'm not saying like with a one time interaction, mm-hmm. but like a patterned lifestyle.
Right.
It does. It starts to be. I mean, and most people won't take it, you know, where offensive or you know break that you're not fine to beef, and you go, it's just not for me. You know, like after a while, it starts to dig a rut. It just does.
Something seems wrong, though, if you're rejecting everything that they seem to call fun and enjoyable.
I don't know what kind of folks you hang out with, Eric.
Fair enough. But I mean, there's a reason in Jesus' culture he was referred to by the religious uptight as a drunkard and a glutton, and it's because he hung out with people who knew how to party.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, implicitly, he's not just hanging out with the people. He's probably also with them. But it doesn't mean that he's engaging to any kind of sinful level. It means that he's showing up at the same parties.
Yeah.
Now, what he's doing, I don't know exactly. But, you know, he's hanging out with all these people that would be normally unsavory. So, I don't know.
Bova?
Well, so I think that... we've created, and I don't know if this is in the church or this is just Christians in general, but we have created this us versus them mentality when it comes to Christians versus non-believers. And I agree that there should be differentiation between the two. Obviously, we should be walking a different path and be able to be differentiated by based off of our actions and what we do and how we do things. But to the point of this guy actually feeling like he needed to alienate himself because he didn't want to be judged because of that, or because he wanted to avoid any kind of meaningful relationship with someone who didn't believe, I don't see a biblical place for that. Is where I'm trying to find it. I just don't see any part of Jesus' story or anyone else's story that says that you're not supposed to find yourself involved in their lives and being able to have meaningful relationships with those people. Now, I get that you should definitely refrain from that kind of behavior. If they're going to a strip club, don't go with them. But
I usually offer to drive them because they've been.
That's totally fair.
I feel like I can come pick you up, make sure you get home safe.
Well, and I think that's the right mentality to have because the snub-nosed Christian is going to go, "Oh, you guys are going to the strip club? How dare you? I hope you don't burn on the way," kind of deal. Like that's ridiculous.
Like whereas, a cartoonish version.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas a person who's not necessarily just looking at the fact that there's sin in their lives and they're about to commit something that they don't care about. But more from the perspective of it's still people and it's still people I need to love on, I am going to get involved in their lives. So I just don't see anyone who's honestly trying to follow Christ's heart on the situation and on people and on his people that doesn't find themselves getting into the trenches and then getting into meaningful relationship with people. I don't see how those two can coincide. I get that there is differentiation, but I don't see how that can be played out in a way that you're not in the trenches with people. You're not constantly in weird scenarios with people because you're the one who offered to be the one light in that dark situation, and you're the one who offered to be the one person that stood up for something that meant something more than just the fun that they were having, but cared enough about their heart and them who they are that you're willing to take a stake and take a risk to be involved in their lives.
So I was reading an article, and I just don't remember the nature of the article, but it was about a guy who was a Mormon, or not Mormon. He got into Scientology. Uh-huh. Okay, so he got into Scientology young, and then now he's I think he's like a professor at a Baptist university or something. And so, but there's one part of the story that really stuck with me, and it was the guy picked up a book by L. Ron Hubbard, and he was kind of reading through it, and he went to school, and there's a teacher there that was an English teacher, And the guy was also a pastor at a local Baptist church. And he stopped one day and he saw this kid reading this book. And he said, L. Ron Hubbard, eh? And the kid starts to explain it to him. He's in high school. And he talked about it a little bit with the teacher. And the teacher didn't really say much about it, but he said, look, one day L. Ron Hubbard is going to let you down. When he does, I want you to call me. And the kid, you know, he kind of bristled with that kind of stuff. And he kept kind of pursuing Scientology. And it took like 3 years or something. And he was reading some more stuff. And he finally came to a place where like something wasn't connecting. Things were not making sense to him. And he said his first call let him down some days. Reading about. Been thinking about. And then after Christ, I think he's a professor somewhere at a Baptist university. But the whole thought is that we've somehow, and part of what Dan was getting at is that we've somehow decided that our job is to call balls and strikes, and that will lead people to Jesus. But I only care what the balls and strikes are because I know who Jesus is. And the truth is that I think there is something that a person that loves Jesus and loves people will always struggle with, which is how close do I get? How close do my actions take where I'm helping to facilitate them doing something that I know will harm them? I don't see Jesus doing that.
Yeah.
But it's probably as close as you possibly can. It's
right.
Probably the right answer, right? Is you get as close as you possibly can where you're not facilitating that. But otherwise, if no one's willing to go that close, the guys that are already in it will never hear the voice of Jesus. That's the truth. And so I think that's something we're going to constantly struggle with. I think you are seeing it's very much a potential that you will go the other way. Will I wear proudly on my sleeve that, yeah, I looked at a little porn? No, I will not wear that proudly on my sleeve, right? Can I say that honestly to somebody, whether they know Jesus or not? Yeah, I will. It's part of my life. But, I think that there is a place where you can overdo that, where would we say Jesus didn't become a drunkard nor a tax collector. But I think he got as absolutely closest to it as he could. And frankly, he knows that balance better than I do. I have to approach that with more caution. I am more susceptible to things than Jesus is. And so, yes, I think that bounce the other way. I think one of the things that we've done, though, is you'll notice that when you get too insulated with the church, what helps me in the church is I might call balls and strikes in Mike's life. I said, Mike, you know you ain't, but we failed to. Out in people who'd otherwise don't trust the umpire.
Yeah.
And so, I think you have to be careful about that, letting that bounce one way too far. But if there's ever indication that God is saying, I don't want you to be a human to other humans, you know, actually I thought this interesting. This is coming up in our Matthew text for this week, but it was interesting to me that one of the things that Jesus is on is that he gives you the golden rule, right? He says, treat other people like you'd want to be treated. And think of everything else kind of comes from his perspective, right? Here's how God wants his people to behave. But he's given you something that has humanity baked into it. How do you perceive things are supposed to be? How do you treat others and understand how you want to be treated? And a lot of times we sometimes regurgitate that out as the things that otherwise Jesus has said. But he's given us something very unique. There's very unique humanity in us having to digest what do I want? How do I feel? Even within the terms of who he created us to be. But more than some of the other things where he says, no, this is not how my people behave. This is not morally where I want you to do because it's harmful to you. They're coming from his perspective. Being able to kind of summarize the things that he said through a more human lens, that's a very interesting way for him to have presented that to us. And it also obviously harkens back to, love God and love people. But it's just, I was thinking about that this week as I was kind of preparing or thinking through that section of scripture. It's just a bit of a unique perspective. And so, but it's interesting in the this concept or this discussion that sometimes we pull some of our humanity out of how we deal with people. And that's where people don't feel like humans anymore. They feel like whatever we've categorized them to be. And the truth is how they live their life, the things they think, the things they do may very well be on the opposite side of truth. It's very, very possible. In fact, it's true for everybody in some way or another. And we'll never run away from that. But the truth is once you start identifying people and lumping them into the things that they have done or the things that they think or the worldview that they attach to, it isn't what I want people to do to me. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think they understand Jesus rightly because they lump me with some other guy who held a sign outside of a concert somewhere. It is wrong for me to do it to them simply because I will never be able to talk to them about Jesus if our barrier is what they think that I think about them and vice versa. And the, to be honest with you, the people whose theology or probably lack thereof is completely on the opposite side of mine, they seem to grasp that a lot better than I do. And frankly, that's why their conversations are making a lot more progress in a culture like ours, is because they're actually treating people like humans at times, Christians aside. But like they're treating people like humans, and the church has got a rap of balls and strikes. And we've perpetuated that some. And so I think we need to re-glimpse our own humanity at times and recognize that we can't get involved in conversations. We can't possibly connect humans to Jesus if we didn't start out with understanding humanity. And I think that's something where we've not done a good job. But obviously, to the extent that this guy felt like there was something that he had to hide, I don't feel that. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I have a little bit of a disconnect with what he's talking about, because I don't know that I've ever felt the urge or the need to have to do that. But then again, he's in a much more varied place than I am. Even in this room, like, there are people that whose jobs put them in a more varied situation than mine has. What I believe seems to be palatable to people. I don't know that I've ever run into trouble expressing what I think. So anyway, I think that's kind of where all that stems from, and where we do have to be careful. And like, it's pretty easy to get the finger wags out and say, yes, that guy could go too far. Yes, he could. But like, I think if you go your whole life and haven't been accused of being a heretic at one way or the other, you're probably not close enough to sin. You're not probably close enough to people that are sinning. Like, you run the risk, and like, it's a dangerous risk. That's the narrow road. The narrow road is that, and that's hard. But like, I think it's kind of par for the course that if some pious guy somewhere is going to wave his finger at how close you got to a guy who doesn't believe what you believe, and it's not a comfortable position. But like, I think that's where the narrow road is.
When I think the whole balls and strike thing, I was thinking of like, when your young children are learning what words are okay to say and what aren't,
yeah,
and they learn one that's not, and then they hear their friend use that word, you know, their initial thought is they tell their friend not to use that word,
right?
You know, well, and then you have to teach them, well, maybe that's okay for them, you know,
right?
You know, or not okay for them, you know. It's
here's why we don't say it.
Exactly.
Other people may be looking at that differently.
Their family might not follow Jesus, and they're not going to teach them that.
Yeah,
you know, and this is your rule. You know, this is for you.
Yeah,
you know, it's for our family. And I think that's what this guy was struggling with a little bit, was that desire to call the balls and strikes on everybody. And he's told himself, I'm going to back off from that and just be a real person, which, yeah, that's a good idea.
So it sounds like he felt like there was some judgment from a Christian perspective if he didn't call the balls and strikes. I don't know that I got the impression that he feels like he should or that he wants to. I think he feels like it's a burden upon him because he's a Christian, that is what he is to do. And so, you need to be free from that. Be free from that. Just be. It's okay to be human. That's cool. But here's the deal. Is like, part of my human story is I'm a human who needs redemption. And part of my human story is that like, there are things that I struggle with that the world simply can't answer, but Jesus does. And so why wouldn't I want to share that with other humans, you know, on a human to human level? Like, that seems like the right place to have that conversation. And I think we sometimes walk into daily life with some sort of weird box around what things are supposed to look like. And it's like, why you just live your life and know that Jesus is a reality within it, as opposed to even the thoughts of the Bible is a rule book or the Bible is a handbook, I think sometimes casts the wrong thought process, because it acts like we have to live the lives that those guys are living. But like, I don't live Paul's life. That's the truth. I don't live his life. Now, Ken, are there things I can learn from how he met Jesus, all right? So, like, yeah, I can learn from that man, and there are concepts that I can take from it. But, like, I cannot recreate his life in my current environment and have any positive evangelistic effect on the world, because the Jesus in that circumstance, Jesus transcends circumstances, but, like, you know, it's just not the same. It's not the same interaction. And so, anyway, it's just something we got to be careful of, is that we don't have – Jesus is the prescription that cures all ills, but, like, he is also like a variant prescription that like it will look differently in different circumstances. And we don't necessarily have to carry those exact circumstances into everything we go to. That is not a burden of which you are forced to carry. The Jesus' burden is light. You get to live your life. It may bring some things into it that make it a narrow road, but like you just don't feel like you have to pile all that stuff on. He ends it with, this great cloud of witnesses we have to surround ourselves with is a gift. Our Christian friends and the church at large are an amazing source of encouragement, strength, hope, and comfort. But let's never get so focused on building each other up that we cut out everyone else. Otherwise, rather than spreading the message of a love that we've been empowered with, we spread a message of isolation and ivory towers of morality. Instead of making relationships that model those that Jesus had, we keep those who don't align with our beliefs at an arm's length, hoping that somehow that's still close enough to qualify as friend, never getting to know them before deciding who they are and what's best for them. I implore you, actually, I don't need to know who they are to know what's best for them. As Jesus was best for them. I implore you, do the scary thing of being yourself around anyone and allow yourself to be vulnerable with people who hold beliefs that are different from, even hostile to, your own. Take the time to truly befriend some of the many people in this world who do not share your beliefs. Be willing to be questioned, challenged, even hurt. There are some of the great freedoms that come with the saving work of Jesus Christ and a joyous part of redemption that I don't want to miss.
Yeah, so I was talking with a good friend of mine earlier this weekend, and he was just kind of telling me a biblical perspective on learning, and it was pretty cool, just the parallels between it and just life in general. And he was saying one of the fundamental aspects of learning is that it's got to pour out. You don't just acquire knowledge, you also need to pass that on. And I kind of see that happening as being sort of the downfall if people only ever hang out in the church and in their church cliques, is that, you know, the Lord teaches you something and he blesses you in some way, and that never really gets passed on. It only just goes from Christian to Christian, and it never goes outside of the four walls that we've got putting up the building. And so we just end up holding this blessing to ourselves and storing up the good things that God has for really the whole world. We just end up hoarding it all to ourselves and keeping it to ourselves. And it just ends up perpetuating a type of almost religious inbreeding, and it's bad. It's not the picture of life. Life is we receive and then we pass on. And I think that's what we're being called to, is you've got to interact with people outside your circle in order to pass things on.
Right. If Jesus is the living water and we're the dam, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I feel like that's an issue. You don't ever want to be the dam. That's another shirt. Put that down. Write that down. Don't be the dam. Are we still? Hey.
This works on all kinds of
levels.
Listen,
KTAA censor folks, that is used in a legitimate way. There's no reason to censor that from the normal broadcast. I'll use the other one after we pass the break. All right. So anyway, I wanted to drop by this article. Here's the deal: I think that's a growing thing. I think that's something, just to kind of hit this broad thought on this article, is that like the narrow road says that we struggle with these things. It says you're not that you struggle with them like internally, but like pursuing greater righteousness in a world that is not, will always be a complicated thing. Will always require prayer and counsel, like, and wisdom. That's just the nature of it. Running from it is the wrong answer. Being a dam is the wrong answer. Like, it's just a complication. And I think that's the Holy Spirit is here to sort stuff like that out. But like our job can't be to isolate it and protect ourselves and just say we will not be part of those things. It simply it cannot be that way. So anyway, so the same picture on relevantmagazine.com came with five practices we need back in our lives. How to reincorporate practices into your life that will give you a new perspective, no matter how busy you are. Here we go. I'm not going to read the introduction. I'm just going to read the things. One, silence. We live in a noisy world, and it's only getting louder by the day. Screens compete for our attention. Social media is always on our mind. Responsibilities pile up as we age. There's never a moment, it seems, to pause amid the craziness, to take a breath from the rat race, to escape the franticness of life. If you've forgotten the sound of silence, try to rediscover it. You might be surprised by what you hear.
Agreed.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You do. I mean, do you purposely do that? Anybody?
Sometimes yes. I will turn my radio off, going, "Why am I listening to this?"
For
you
some
know,
reason,
there's always noise. You know, I always turn. Every once in a while, I have to turn stuff off.
Whenever I go for like a walk or go exercise or anything like that, I have to have my music on or something. I have to have some kind of noise. And I was on a really long walk recently, like a 6-mile walk. About halfway through, nowhere near a charger, and my phone died.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there like really angry for a good 5 minutes. Like, how am I supposed to possibly walk the rest of this way? I'm not going to be motivated at all to do this. And then I kind of just stopped myself, and I'm like, you know what? I haven't really done in a long time. Just sit and listen. And I kind of just did a real quick introductory. God, I'm just going to listen. I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. I have no expectations for you saying anything. frankly, sometimes I don't really know how to differentiate whether my mind is just going, Troy, and I'm like, God, hey, is that you? Or if I don't know what's going on.
I like that God's voice in your mind is some sort of like 7-year-old's impression of a ghost.
It's a ghoul. It's a total Troy. I'm like, this dude definitely has to be God. Like, there's no way that's not me. But I've found myself doing that more and more often, and I'm not any better at it, but I'm starting to enjoy it more and more and more. So yeah, right. Do it.
Right. Silence it is. I don't do that. Sometimes I drive without the radio on. Like sometimes I'll do that. It does feel like more a heavier moment. Like if I drove 20 minutes and like didn't have the radio on, it felt like I was thinking of something epic, but I probably wasn't. I was like, there'll be a sandwich at home. I should make a sandwich.
And that's sad, though, yard. Like you driving a 2-ton mechanical beast with a steering box, and this can't hold your attention. You're like, I'm bored. I am bored. There's nothing going on. And like I've done that. I've shut off the radio in the truck or whatever, and I'm driving. I'm like, I'm just tastelessly bored. Like I just something needs to happen here. And so you turn on the radio and like, this is not doing it. And it's just amazing. Like the simple joys of when the car first came out, everyone's like, this is going to take all my attention. I really got to. And then nowadays you're just like, just this driving this giant machinery is just not doing it for me. I'm going to, there's millions of people around me. There's barriers. There's turns coming. I can't do this very long. I'm bored.
You know, it used to be that you would say like, I want the eyes of a child, right? To see the wonder of a child. But the truth is like, we're ruining children. Like my kids are ruined. I'm ruined along with it. I noticed that we were in the car the other day, and my oldest daughter's like, hey, can I use your phone? I'm like, nah, look out the window. Like, there's nothing to do in here. I'm like, there's a window. Like, play with your knees. I don't care what you do, but just like, I say that all the time. They hate that. So I said, you know, just do that. Find something to do. And then like literally 10 seconds later, pulled up my phone and I looked at something. I'm like, disaster. I've done this to children. But now, you know what? I feel like I want to see the world the way like later generations see it. Like there's 75-year-old people like who look at the world and like they've seen it change and they still wonder at nature and they wonder at things, how things progress. And there's like, it's not a simple understanding. It's a very complex understanding, but they look at the world with much more wonder than I do, because I expect the world to work in a certain way. And I'm it's hard to make, to bring wonder to me. And so, I actually would like to see the world like a 75-year-old man.
Isn't that kind of funny though? Cause like, I mean, like the cliche that you always hear is like, my knee's acting up, there's storms coming in, right? That won't be here in 30 years, because everyone knows if a storm's coming in because they check their phone. You know what I'm saying? Like, the guy that's in tune with nature, or that weird implant he had, starts acting funny when static charge comes in from Arkansas. Like, it'll be gone, because no one will ever need that or think about it, because they checked the weather on their phone 10 minutes ago.
That will be a sad thing to die out.
Yeah, it will. Like, that guy's funny.
Yeah, now it's my weather app is buzzing.
That's right. My phone told me it's going to rain. This knee can't be trusted.
Yeah. Actually, I suppose that still inspires wonder. It's the old man who, like, a second before it happens goes, honey, the phone's going to ring. And, like, the phone rings, and you're like, hey, how does this even happen?
Hey. I was at a training class one time. A guy was telling a story like they thought this lady thought she had become psychic because the dog could always tell. They thought the dog was psychic because they thought the dog could always tell when the phone was ringing, and because he'd start barking, you know, and then the phone would ring. And it went on like this for weeks, you know. And then finally, like, a buddy of theirs came over and said, hey, man, you have your dog's collar hooked up to the telephone line. And so... And so, like, the dog was running across the yard with his collar tied to the telephone line. So every time it would ring, it would shock the dog. And he'd move enough for the signal to come through, and then the phone would ring. So needless to say, the dog is not psychic, as previously thought. Technology ruins it again.
All right. So silence. We're in for silence. Two, purposeful conversation. Have you noticed that the older you get, the harder it is to have purposeful conversation? I think it happens to all of us. As we age, we put on masks. This got heavy. We learn to hide the bad and project the good. This results in superficial relationships and shallow conversation. I don't really have that problem, actually.
I hate this conversation.
Mike, take off your mask. Just be who you
need to
be.
I mean, I can't even talk on this plane, whatever you're saying. Putting on masks or whatever, having a tough conversation. Go ahead, continue on. I'm sorry.
Anyway, if you find yourself lacking real friendships, make a point of identifying those you trust and begin opening your life to them.
Yeah, for
your openness will encourage them to share their life with you. I mean, here's the deal. Like,
I have never stayed up at night going, I lack real friendships. You think it's because of the mask I wear? Seriously, who talks like this?
Mike is the wrong audience for this article.
Holy cow. Well,
actually, so I think the
the broader point. Go ahead.
The broader point makes sense. How they've worded it is not tickle Mike's character.
Who is the author of this?
My inner self wrote it.
Is it Cindy?
It's under three masks.
Paul Perkins.
Oh, okay.
He writes about living intentionally at paulperkins.com. He lives out.
I bet.
Paul Perkins lives out loud.
He wears no masks.
The Art of Creating, about developing your artistic craft.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I'm going to bring him on, Mike, and you're going to be friends with him.
I'm going to interview him and go, we don't have anything in common. Let's do this thing.
So I would say that, like, I stink at, unless I know you, I'm very bad at superficial conversation, but that actually makes sense. Like, the closer you are to people, the more likely you are to have purposeful conversation. The people you don't know, I was at some guy's birthday party over the weekend, and, like, there were a couple of dudes that were standing around. I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, well, how's your job? And then I thought, I don't know anything else to ask you. So I'm going to get some coffee. And I got tea instead. Anyway.
The real barn murder.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know. I suppose being intentional, maybe it goes back to the previous article, is like, who are you opening up your life to? But like, I feel like I don't want to open up this guy and say, hey, by the way, I was dishonest with my wife 3 weeks ago. So, and I leave my socks on the floor. What are your thoughts? Change me.
I think we have a unique room here. There's maybe, there's certainly a minority of people who are actually good at small talk.
That's a good point.
As
good
I'm
point
looking
here.
Around, just
yeah, yeah.
Mike, you're alone in this one.
I would say, who is?
You're good really at good talk. At that small talk.
I'm
man.
A social wizard. I made friends with three people today, looking through garbage.
Solid point. Hey, man. So I told you we were junking. I ran into some old ladies in a Toyota Scion on Friday night. And, I mean, this woman's probably 80 years old. And I walked up and I started looking through the garbage she was looking at. I said, hey, man, how's it been going tonight? You getting anything good? And she goes, oh, no. She had a wear and a fanny pack. She goes, oh, well, nothing great. I did find a sack of fire trucks. I thought, sweet. Like, that's kind of cool. Grandma found some fire trucks. She goes, yeah, I'm going to put them in my garage sale in a couple weeks. I don't even have any grandkids. And I thought, well, you shifty old biddy. Like, there might be some kids sifting through looking for fire trucks. And Grandma made off with them so she could bonus on them in their yard sale.
Yeah.
Anyway. Heads up for the old ladies. It was a nice Toyota Scion. I thought, maybe she knows how to run her life, and I don't. That's probably the truth of it.
I thought the purpose of a yard sale was to get rid of stuff.
She's collecting stuff to make big dollars. Social Security ain't what it used to be, Eric.
All right.
Number three, selfless service. If there's one advancement that defines our generation, it's social media. While the increased connectivity is great, it also transformed each of us into many celebrities. Ain't that the truth? Among an ever-widening circle, our every thought and 140 characters and image refined with filters, it broadcasts for all to see. He acts like he ain't fortunate for it. This leaves us in a perpetual state of plotting and planning how to capture another Facebook like, another Instagram heart, another Twitter favorite. For all its benefits, social media and the obsessive affirmation seeking it spawns can easily nudge us towards egocentrism, where our social standing is what matters most. The solution to our culture's me-driven mentality is simple. Service. Looking to give while gaining nothing in return. And that means no status updates announcing your good deeds to the world.
Is this a room that really cares about the number of likes they get on a message?
I don't know.
Mike cares.
Yeah, I do.
This article was written specifically with Mike in mind.
I said bad things earlier, but I feel like this man is my soul.
being honest, yeah, at one point in time, that was totally me. I thought that the more Facebook friends I had or MySpace friends that I had, that the more popular I was at school. And that kind of carried on a little bit into late teenage years, like 18, 19 years old.
23.
23 years old, probably 24, still working on that one.
Yeah, I think you're prone to that still.
You posted
a little bit.
Like a 10-minute epic video this week.
I actually expected one of you guys to bring that up. I honestly,
it was good. I'm not saying it wasn't good. I'm just
at
saying.
One point in time, that would have been my mentality, was to post that just so I can get, you know, 100 likes or whatever that is. But I legitimately, I want to post that stuff or get involved in that stuff because you guys don't realize how much stuff happens behind the scenes.
No.
Like, everybody sees, like, a post that I'll put up, whether it be a 5-minute, 10-minute, 20-minute video, I'll get 600 likes on it. You guys don't realize how many instant messages I get of people that are just like, dude, you don't realize what that did for me, or you don't realize how impactful that was, or people reaching out to me like, hey, anytime you ever need help, or I've been struggling with something like that, I've never been able to find the words to say, but the fact that you said it like that makes perfect sense. That's the biggest reason I do. I honestly could care less about the likes because I get them if I post a picture of me in yellow shorts, or I get them if I post a picture of me like serving other people. It does not matter, but I would much rather do something meaningful that people are legitimately going to get things out of.
No, yeah, I'm for that. I could go without hearing long conversations on your legs ever again. But like those videos, I think are all right.
Yeah, agreed.
Every time long you post a picture and kind of you in the mirror or whatever with whatever you got on, people are like, oh, Troy. And then they're like they start talking about your physique. And I can't
that blows up pretty quick, and I'm trying not to do that
anymore. I can't take that in. I read it, and I think to myself, I need to sit in silence somewhere.
Yeah, I need to sit in silence, do something nice for somebody, and have a meaningful conversation at the same time.
My inner soul is wounded.
No more yellow shorts pics, Troy.
Is this what it is to be a meaningful relationship? Because I'm out. I can't do this anymore.
Troy's legs wear a mask. Here we go.
Of gorgeousness.
Here we go. Intentional adventures. Growing up, every day was an adventure. That seems to be romanticized. Pickup games and afternoon swims. Practical jokes and late night parties. Heck, I didn't live this way. Saturday morning.
I was going to say, wow.
One egg for breakfast. Saturday morning brunches and long walks at the park. It wasn't just the fun activities that defined that season of life. That's a Christian thing to say. Life comes in seasons. It was the attitude, the belief that every day was full of wonder and potential. Life was whimsical. He might have been on the pot.
What did you skip second grade?
I was going to say, what was it like to live in every 1980s movie about a group of kids? Like, are you serious? My childhood was, hey, man, do you want to go play a video game for 6 hours and then end your night eating a bunch of cheese pizza? Sure.
Here's the deal.
Every day is a mystery.
Third grade was a lot of things, but whimsical was not one of them.
Do you take long walks on the beach and nice afternoon swims and then Sunday brunches? No, I remember having a pizza pocket on Sunday afternoon when I sat by myself.
Practical joke. Anyway.
Truth.
This guy might live a life that no one else led.
Get out of the house. No, mom and dad.
I grew up in a small town. I knew every inch of my neighbor's yard, our yard, every field around. I mean, we would
go for afternoon swims?
What's that?
Did you go for afternoon swims?
Yes, actually, I did.
Yes, I did, too. Clear Lake, Iowa. It's similar.
Yeah, about a mile out of town, there's a bridge, and we'd go bridge jumping. And,
that does not exist.
What's that?
There's no such childhood.
We'd ride our bikes off the docks.
I had
and
it. I lived
walk
this.
To the beaches. And
it was fun.
Okay, the apartments? Apartment, fellas?
Yeah.
Duplex.
Okay, same deal. All right.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't have any bridges to jump off of.
We got the broom where the guy upstairs is too loud.
We got our entertainment was, hey, man, make sure you go clean out the shed. All right.
Who's the guy? Who sang Knock Three Times? Tony Orlando? That guy ruined it, trying to get people to calm down for everybody. Because you knock three times on the ceiling to get them to shut up, and they come down and they're like, I thought you wanted me.
You heard me? For the last time, Jerry.
Twice on the parts.
All right. Even if you're in a cubicle.
Why is there exposed piping in here? What a dump.
I think it was the heater, Mike.
Huh?
The twice on the pipe was on the radiator.
Knock three times and then twice on the pipe. Yeah.
Twice on the pipe was because they had a radiator.
That didn't say that. You're just guessing. It could be the sewer pipe.
What it is.
Sewer pipe.
All right. Just sticking out of the living room.
Even if
you like our new furniture, it's
PVC
modern.
PVC doesn't make a cool clang.
Even if you're in a cubicle, Booba, caring for children or answering phones, the attitude that defined your youth is still accessible.
All right.
Stop wearing the mask. It's simply a matter of living with intention and making the most of every moment. Choose joy, adventure, and whimsy. There's time every day to do something fun. Here's the deal. I am going to have a problem calling my wife and it's like, babe, I've chose whimsy this afternoon.
Mike, I need you to drive over here and fix this thing. That don't sound whimsical.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me something else.
Hey, I'm on an adventure.
Can you do something for somebody else? Nah, I'm going to be spending my time doing some afternoon swims. I'm sorry. Do you need to be saved in a pond? Because that's where I'll be.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think he's talking about action so much as attitude throughout this. But
you can't say that in a modern context. I don't mean to bring this. That sounds like a stripper. When you say I choose whimsy, like that sounds like. our culture was ruined. I'm sorry. That's what happened? Anyway, choose adventure. The truth is, though, and I find myself. I've said this in more context than I. And I've said it even on the show, is like if you live your days like you want your life to be. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you don't on a daily basis choose to have those types of things in there, you can't be surprised when 60 years goes by and you didn't have whimsy in your life.
No whimsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so here's the deal. So, like, figure out what you want your life to look like and then try to make sure that happens on a daily basis, and they will simply accumulate and become your life. So, I mean, there's truth to that. Yeah. He just worded it in a way that's not palatable for this
movie. Maybe we can all start floating 6 inches above the ground. And pick daisies.
Hey, Mike, are you doing anything on Saturday? Nope. Would you by chance like to go bridge jumping and then have an afternoon swim?
Boy, howdy, that sounds whimsical. Me and my friend Boover are going down bridge.
I'll make that a Facebook status and see how many likes we get.
Do you have any overalls you can wear? Because I'll wear my overalls, too.
Of course I do.
Hey, that's what God wears, because he is overall.
That needs to never happen again. I think we need to make like a pact as a show that that never happens again.
Don't be the damn. Here, final one. Mutual encouragement. As a kid, I played a lot of sports, no doubt. Although I enjoyed this competition, I mostly love being on a team and working toward a larger purpose. All right, Mike. I've lost the other part of the room. In that context, every teammate becomes a cheerleader. There's nothing quite like the energy created by mutual encouragement. It lifts. Oh, we're done. We're just going to let this thing go.
There's no part of me. There's no part
of
me.
Our neighborhood
that can get on board with any of this article. None.
But our neighborhood got together and played sports. We just fought the whole time and argued. Was an out. It was not an out.
It's like, here's what we need to start doing: silence, and then a bunch of other mamby-pamby stuff that nobody really actually wants to do. Do you want to play on a slow pitch softball team and get back to that youth team that you miss?
Let's just admit it's a little bit Andy Griffith show and call it a day. All right, that's the deal.
Get your burlap sack, boys. We're going down to the pond.
All right.
It's nighttime, Boova. Your mama be calling. Better heads back home.
Hey, man, them streetlights be turning on. You best get home, boy.
Back in the day when I used to go to the lake about every day, I'd ordered online a big hand blow up mattress. It was a giant hand. It was awesome.
Was that the end of that?
That was really all. It was just cute. It was just cool floating on the lake on a hand.
I was really waiting for that to get involved in something else that was happening. You just gotta stop.
It was great.
Hey, Dan, I had a rhino type bicycle when I was about 9.
Was it whimsical?
All right.
Is this nostalgia hour?
You've made the mistake of listening to Life in the Path.
Not my fault.
If you're on the podcast, God bless you. Seriously.
We got 20 more minutes of this.
If you're on KTAA, I grant you a reprieve. Don't hold this against our sponsors. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path. We'll see you next week.
Transition one down.
Transition one.
Let's go play sports.
Ratio to Boo Radley's apple tree.
Oh man, I thought of Boo Radley as a sermon example this week, but I forgot what the context was, and so it's gone completely. Oh, no. I have to Evernote that stuff directly, otherwise it's gone.
You can pull a Dan and just bring it up anyway. Hey guys, Boo Radley. Yeah,
done.
Blow up glove. Thank
hey, Mike.
You.
What the heck, Dan?
If you were to have found a giant blow up hand, would you have purchased it when you were younger?
That was the best thing ever.
Heck yeah.
This may not be the time or place, but get on my hand.
Hey,
Phillip, story.
I don't know if the story has anything to do with what's going on right now, but at one point in time when I was a kid, I definitely bought myself a big hand mattress.
Let's cuddle up in my giant hand and go on the lake.
Oh, man, that's creepy.
All right. Mike, do you have Pope style?
Yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah.
All right. So the concept of Pope style is someone has accidentally told a group of people that Mike is possibly the Pope. And now a bunch of people have showed up at Mike's house and will not leave his porch until he gives some kind of wisdom that would come from the Pope. And so now he's got to give us something that will appease the masses to leave his place. Mike, what do you got?
So I tried my first fast for about 3 weeks, and I've never done it before. And it all seemed whimsical to me, frankly. Like I people always said they did it, and it was deep. It was some kind of deep spiritual thing. I'm like, I don't even see this as necessary, you know. But my wife and I were talking about it after we had a sermon on fasting at church, and I was staunch against it. I'm like, no, this is stupid. I'm not doing this, you know. And then I thought, well, crap. Why am I so against it? Now I feel like I have to do it just because I said I'm not going to do it, and I think it's stupid. I thought it can't hurt anything. And so, anyway, my wife and I embarked on this fast, and I thought, I don't see the point in this thing, but, like, I'm going to do this anyway because I feel like I got to give away some of my will here. Like, I'm holding on to this not doing the fast way too hard. And really what it boiled down to was 3 weeks, and it was kind of great. It was kind of awesome. And I kind of got something out of it that I didn't expect. Like for some reason, I thought I'd come out with some kind of glowing perspective that the whole world had changed, and I finally understood, like, God, you know, like I finally got it.
He's like a giant hand.
I didn't have to. I didn't have to phone in my like I always struggle with a king, like with God as king. I struggle with that because I don't have an earthly king that I can put it as a perspective, and like I just I struggle with like sovereign authority, with like really trying to like think that I totally understand God in his place. And I'm like, I know what's going to happen with this fast when I start. I'm like, I'm going to come out and I'm going to truly understand God is king, and like my whole world's going to blow up. That's not, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. But what did happen, and it was kind of an amazing part, and it was happened like 2 days before the fast was over, is like I realized that I can say no to things. And like it was weird because it was just that simple, but I thought of like of all the things like it, like this fast was like, it's not, wasn't just like, hey, I'm not going to eat any chocolate. I was like eating beans and water. That was pretty much the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't know hunger. I didn't know weakness in the whole thing. Like I prayed and I talked to God and all that stuff was great. But just before it ended, I realized that like I can say no. I can say no to things, and like there's certain sins that plague me, that just plague me, and like they came up during the fast, and I just said no. Said I'm just not going to do that, you know. And like it was so odd that like I needed a complete perspective change to realize that I can just, there's sins that don't control me. Like I just have to say no and say God doesn't need this, God doesn't want this. God says I have to say no to you, so the answer is no. Like, and it's not like he's forcing me. It's an agreement, just like the fast was. Like, I agreed to, you know, whatever, stick to this strict diet. And, like, I was tempted to get off it every once in a while just for mere convenience. And when it came up, I thought, no, God and I agreed that this is what I was going to do. And I said no, and it was over. And I didn't lament it. I wasn't upset. It wasn't terrible. I just said no, and it was done. It was just a fact of life. I can't do that. And it was funny, like I had some situations come up where one of my major propensities to sin is to gossip about a guy or you know, get angry for some reason. And I thought, no, God and I agreed that we're not going to do that. And then it was just a no. And so I think my Pope style advice is this, is like, I'm not saying like fast is like the fast for me, like something came out of it that I didn't expect. So I don't know that I'd walk into it saying like, I expect to do this work, God, and I expect you to give me this in return. But I would say that, like, when you trust God more than you normally trust him, when you put the way that your life runs in his hands, like, the answers, they're not as hard as you thought. You know, like, it just doesn't turn out to be as big of a deal as you thought. You're not going to turn into some kind of perfect dude or anything, but, like, sometimes it is just as simple as saying, no, I'm just not going to do that, and then having it be done.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Bova, what are your thoughts?
So this is gonna play off of what you're coming from, but this is more of a question to everybody. But what kind of things would you say to someone who's contemplating going on a fast? What advice would you give in regards to intentions, to in regards to execution of doing it or anything like that, for those that don't fully understand what a fast is about, why you would do it, and what kind of expectations to have? What would you say to someone who is contemplating doing it? Because I know there's a couple dudes now that, I mean, a couple of you have already done fasts recently. So what would you say to someone who's thinking about doing one?
So I can tell you exactly why I did it, and it was some of what I said, but like we talked about on the show before, where I said, you know, I always imagine me sitting on one side of the table and Jesus sitting on the other. And like, I look over the table and I say, here's where the parts of my life you can have control. And then I start picking things off and kind of putting them in my pocket or putting them down by the bench and being like, except for this part here, except for this thing here. And like, just for the mere fact that I didn't want to do it was enough for me to say, I'm going to do this, right? Like, I didn't want him. It's not like he didn't tell me anything about it. He's not like, you're going to eat and beans and pure wheat right off the ground and this is what you're going to do. He didn't say any of that stuff, right? But I knew, like, if I didn't draw it strict, I wouldn't be depending on him for anything. Okay. And that's what I wanted. And I did it for the mere fact that I didn't want to do it, because I didn't want to give it to him. And I thought, I'm not going to go through whatever 3 weeks of suffering for no reason. And I thought, you're going to go through 3 weeks of this fast merely because you don't trust that God's going to provide for you and you think it's going to be suffering. And that's why I did it. And that might just be my personality and how Jesus deals with me. He deals with me different than he deals with other people, because I'm his kid and he loves me and he knows how to push me around. And so, like, I don't know if that's a good motivation, but that was mine.
Okay. All right.
That's the Pope's advice. Get off the lawn. All right, what you got, Mike? You got the Dear Life
from
the Path?
Yeah, we got time for a couple of these. Ready?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path. My brother is older than I am and has been in and out of prison. He has stolen my things and pawned them. I am married, and my husband and I are expecting our first child. We live in a time zone several hours behind the one my family is in. I am now receiving phone calls at 4 o'clock in the morning from collection agencies on the hunt for my brother. He has been writing bad checks and leaving my phone number as a contact number. I have managed to determine who his probation officer is, and I'm on the fence about whether I should tell her what he is up to. My dad is furious with me for even considering it, since brothers and sisters don't do that to each other. Honestly, I'm fed up with this blood-is-thicker-than-water mentality when it comes to my brother's wrongdoings. He is now including my family in his schemes, and I won't stand for it any longer. What should I do?
How is he including your family in the schemes? I mean, other than just leaving a phone number as a contact.
No, that's pretty much it. Sounds
like she's like waking him up. Her family is impacted because she's woken up and getting phone calls at 4 in the morning, I guess.
I say turn him in.
Dan says turn him in.
Making choices.
That's a consequence to his actions. He's passing bad checks.
Yeah. I mean he's what are you protecting him from?
If you turn him in, you're the one who turned him in.
That's okay. He's the one who wrote the bad checks and gave my number.
Right, but when he suffers the consequences, he's looking at you. He's not looking at himself.
That's okay.
So
what I'm saying is he's not going to blame himself and start taking responsibility or anything. He's going to look squarely at you.
Oh, yeah, it'll be all your fault.
That's the end of the relationship, I'm just saying.
That's probably good.
Okay.
I don't know why that would be good, Dan. Why would that be good?
I don't think he has a relationship with her other than he's using her and abusing her. I mean, if he wants to leave it because she's protecting her family, and that's on him.
Well, I mean, that seems like a
I can't cobble guy forever.
This seems like a slight overreaction. Like, her family's not under threat. Like, don't answer the phone at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, turn your phone on vibrate. Well, from 10 to 6.
That's what I would do, but you know, I'm.
But you would recommend to exact revenge for.
No, I didn't say revenge. Just he's got to be held accountable. I mean, at least when they call, I'd say, well, here's his probation officer's number. Call him. He knows might know how to get hold of him.
I don't know. I'm not the police. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I mean, the police can do their job.
I've done that with family members who were giving me numbers and or giving other people numbers and calling me, and I'm like, hey, I don't know. You have to reach him in prison.
What the heck, Mike? What, the police can do their job?
Yeah, I mean,
somebody.
Well, what are you going to shackle him to the radiator and say, come pick him up,
no,
Johnny?
I mean, I get that, right? But, like, if you know that someone that you're related to is doing something illegal, harming themselves or others, and you're like,
yeah, I'm not going to protect that.
It's like my issue. Police will hope the police find him.
Yeah.
Is there a level of crime of which that goes away? There are guys storing bodies in your car?
Well, I mean, we might have to talk about that.
I'm just asking.
I'm just saying, if you wanted to commit crime, I'm your brother.
All right, he's just passing bad checks. He's not physically endangering someone's life.
No, I'm just I was wondering where Mike's line is. They're like, if the thought process is the police will do their job, like, I mean, it's still wrong.
Hey,
I mean,
you're not going to use my services. I get it. So, I mean, I'm just saying.
So, Herrick, what level of breaking the law are you okay with to harbor a relation?
I'm not going to outsource relationship maintenance to someone else. I mean, if he's in trouble with the law, that's between him and the law. I don't need to do the law's job for them.
That's just what I freaking
said.
Why don't you yell at Herrick?
No,
that's what I'm asking. So, like, to what level of law breaking is that all right with you?
To what level of law breaking? Is he harming someone else?
Yeah, let's say he did. I mean, he harmed the store. I don't know how you can make the case he didn't harm the store owner. That guy's out money. He stole from him. As long as he doesn't hit him in the head with a bat, you're all right?
Well, I mean, immediate danger of someone's life. That kind of harm.
That's the limit?
What's that?
So, like, it breaks his arm. He's not going to die. That's all right?
Yeah.
Hey, he clubbed a guy at the 7-Eleven. Yeah, he's staying at my house. No, it's not my responsibility.
Like, he has actually committed violent crimes, is what you're describing? Yes, I would draw a line at violent crimes. If he's not able to...
So physical harm, if it's financial harm, guy has trouble making money at 7-Eleven because your brother's passing bad checks, you're like, eh.
Yeah,
no one seemed like my problem.
Yeah, no one told him to open up a gas station. That was his choice.
I'm interested in your lines here, boys. I don't understand what about. I mean, the guy's a bit of a scofflaw. He's stealing from other people, and you know it.
A scofflaw,
and giving your phone number.
like take your impact out of it. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's take the you're inconvenienced at 4 a.m. I've had that. I'll put up with inconvenience from my family members at 4 a.m. It happens. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about, like, this guy you know is harming other people and seems to be doing it consistently and has put you in the middle of that process. And you're basically saying, I'm not my brother's keeper. It's not my responsibility to have to hook him up with the law when he's actually breaking it.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm with Eric. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. If I know that he's committing violent crimes, then yeah, I'm going to stop him.
Is there a level of theft of which you don't have a problem? He could steal $10, $10,000, you don't care?
If he tries to steal from the queen, I won't put up with that garbage.
No, I'll let him.
No amount of money.
I mean, if he's looking for some kind of help from me, no, there's not. I'm not going to help him go out.
If he's stealing money and blaming you and the police are coming after you, that's what he's doing.
But Herrick's innocent. It should be fairly easy to prove that.
Yeah, that's real easy to prove. Hi. I was here.
Hi. I've never met the queen.
I don't know. I'm just like in the instance, it seems like you're able to keep yourself separated from the circumstance of which, like, you have to look at the guy who's running the 7-Eleven in the face and know, like, that's how the guy makes money, right? That's how he feeds his kids, whatever.
I didn't steal from him.
No, I know that, but, like, you know who did, and you're simply saying, it doesn't seem like my problem. I hope you find him.
Yeah, it's not.
That's
my...
a lie. Do you know who did this?
The guy at the 7-Eleven is not going to come
yeah,
up to
yeah, right. He asked every guy that comes in, and you just happen to attend the exact same 7-Eleven out of what, spite?
I'm just asking, if he asks you, do you know who did this, what then?
It's not my job to rectify your sins. It's your job to rectify your sins and to deal with those. I can help you, and I can help counsel you and say, hey, you need to go out and take ownership of your actions, but it's not my job to take responsibility for your actions.
Unless it's a physical, that's not universally true. Unless it's a physical problem, and then it is your responsibility?
Yeah, because you're about to cause physical harm to another human being, yeah.
I don't understand why the physical harm is the distinction. Like, why is it financial harm a distinction?
Loss of property?
Yeah.
It's just material. It can be replaced.
Well, true, but like, I mean, did not the Old Testament law deal in loss of property?
Mm-hmm.
And if you see a man, if you see a man's wayward cow, you're supposed to do something about it. This is the man.
If I see a wayward cow, yeah, I will go get the cow and bring it back to the man.
Hold on a minute. Is not the man, the 7-Eleven owner's wayward money in the pocket of your brother?
It's not wayward. It was purposely
stolen.
Like,
it's running away. I don't really care.
I will tell my brother he needs to return it. And if his brother leaves, if my brother leaves that over at my place, then yes, I'll go return it. But.
If you see it running down the road, you feel like that's
what are you suggesting that Herrick Miami vices himself out and goes looking for the guy?
Yeah.
No, I'm just trying
to shake down my brother. Is that what you're asking?
But you don't even have to shake him down. You know where he's at.
This question does not imply that she knows where he's at. First of all,
no, that's true. It's possible. It's possible you don't know where he's at.
I mean, if he was living in my house, that's probably different.
Okay.
I mean, what I would do when they would call me over a relative's situation. Because he said it was me, I would say, well, he's not here. He does not live here. Here's all of his contact information. Good luck. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cooperating with the law. I'd be happy
and that was
to
like,
do that.
And it wasn't even the law. It was like collectors and everything. And that's, isn't that the problem this gal has too?
So you'd be all right giving him contact information.
Yeah.
Because, here's the deal. Is it doesn't do you any good. You're no evidence, right? So, like, mm-hmm. to the extent that you're not convicting him.
You're not going to handcuff him and say, he's here.
Yeah, because you said
come get
so.
Him.
I get that. I mean, I think they already have their suspicions. I guess I'm that's what I'm trying to gauge. Is it sounded like the way you guys were talking that you simply will not cooperate.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Well, what method of...
You projected that on me. You wanted me to be the scoff
Mike, just take off the mask.
Okay, so you would cooperate in turning him in?
I'm not gonna walk him in there. If they ask where he is, I can say it's where I seen him last. I'm telling the truth.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, that's all I was saying.
Okay.
No, you were saying exact revenge against him.
Yeah, you were actively going out and saying, "Hey, I'm going to contact his parole officer."
I'm saying here's all his contact information.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right.
That doesn't sound the same as what you said.
No, that's true, Dan. That doesn't really sound.
I think you changed your position.
Okay, give him the parole officer's information too. Here's all the ways you can contact him.
I feel like he's probably not in touch with his parole officer. He's passing back checks, man.
I'm not saying I'm going to tackle him and handcuff him and tie him up until the police get there. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying here's how you can find him.
So I would agree with this. I would help them contact him the same way I would in the same likeness that if someone were to call and say, hey, I haven't seen Chuck in a while. Do you know how to get a hold of him? I'd say, yeah, here's Chuck's number if I have it.
Yeah.
So I'd probably participate in hooking people up who need to get hooked up together. I don't know that I would have responsibility outside that point.
Right, yeah.
Because I obviously can't, they're suspected he passed bad checks. I mean, I'm also not the law. I can't really prove that.
Right. Okay. And she sounds like the family is upset that she would even consider giving information out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're just going to have to deal with that. Like, it sounds like the dad would harbor him in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I would call that a mistake.
Family's family. Brothers and sisters don't, rat each other out kind of deal.
Whenever that son learned those activities, maybe from dad. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the dad's a moonshiner.
That was not in the text.
I'm just assuming that's what happened.
I think we can figure it out.
Here's what Secular says.
Okay.
Your father's obviously a moonshiner. There are no excuses for what your brother has done. If his father had given him a dose of tough love while he was a minor, he might have stayed on the straight and narrow instead of landing in the pokey. Oh, yeah.
Preach
yeah.
a Secular.
You know that family, sure. Do not allow anyone to make you feel guilty for protecting yourself and your family. Blood isn't thicker than water when abuse is involved, and your brother's behavior qualifies.
Amen.
Contact his probation officer. With luck, when the collection agency calls again, you will be able to give them your brother's cell, in parentheses, number. Get it? Cell, jail.
A42, yeah. C block.
Boy, I just don't like that whole, thing.
You don't care for that advice?
No, I don't know. There's vendetta built in there. You know what I'm saying? You've inconvenienced me. Not only have you committed the crimes, but now you've inconvenienced me. So take this retribution.
So is the distinction there is like, are you trying to help right wrongs or you want to turn the screw?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the question.
That's
right.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you want to turn the screw. I think that it's coming from bitterness and anger and how dare you involve me in your business and agreed his behavior is not honoring to it, not your family, himself, God, whatever. Right. But like, you want to be the guy that, like, if the screwdriver is going to get turned on you, I want to be the guy holding it. Now you've gone too far. Now you're just a bitter person carrying that around for no reason.
I think that's true. I think we are in the business of righting wrongs because Jesus is in the bit of righting wrongs. Vengeance is his, though. Once it starts to sniff of that, I suppose you got to back away from that.
Yeah, here's the deals. I think more than likely I agree with everything you guys were saying, but like. It matters where your heart's on at it. If you're the guy that just wants to put the knife in, then you're not thinking right. Okay, here we go.
Okay, last one.
Dear Life from the Path, I have noticed that some people in my age group, 60s, are becoming compulsive talkers.
What?
Boova, how old are you?
48.
These people don't ask questions of those around them. When someone begins to speak, the compulsive talker interrupts, usually in a louder voice, and returns to dominate the conversation. Some of them even continue to ramble on even when no one is listening anymore.
I'm not sure that's compulsive talking.
I tire quickly when I'm around these marathon talkers, but I'm too polite to interrupt them. It wouldn't do any good anyway because they seem unable to stop. When someone tells them they talk too much, they get offended, but the behavior doesn't change. Do you have any suggestions for how to handle compulsive talkers so I won't have to listen to the person go on and on? It makes me feel fatigued, irritable, and trapped.
All right, here's the deal. They're old. They can't hear. They don't know when anyone else is talking. That's why they interrupt. And that's why they talk loud.
I'm going to rephrase this question so it's more accurate. Dear Life from the Path, I'm a great person. People around me are not great.
Yes.
How do I co-mingle with people not as great as me? Yeah. Love, I'm great.
Shut up and grow some patience.
Yeah, for instance.
Dan is willing to chalk it up to physical deformities.
The people around you are obviously not doing anything that they're meaning to do. They just can't hear everyone around them.
It magically begins at age 60.
Grow some patience. Understand that if you're
sass talk me, Boova, I didn't write it.
Mike, grow some patience, man. If you're in the business of loving on people, you're going to find yourself in situations where you got guys like me that never shut up.
Yeah.
Deal with us, love us, listen to us, and have patience.
But sometimes it's hard, Boova.
It is completely difficult. I understand that. Just have some patience.
I can't embrace your life choices when on the opposite side of truth, Boova. And the truth is, you can't keep acting like that.
Patience.
You're going to get a flag for you and continue with talking.
Does anybody have any legit advice for this person?
I don't know.
Walk away?
Yeah. Just leave. Leave, yeah. You say.
It alleviates feeling trapped.
Hang out with younger people?
Yeah.
They don't have as many hearing issues?
Touch the person on the shoulder.
Say, hey, it's all a bit much, Earl. It's a bit much what you're saying.
I mean, if they're having trouble hearing, and so that's why they're talking so loud and never really pause.
I don't think that's legit.
You don't think that's it?
That they have a hard time hearing, so the quantity of talking increases?
Do you ever go into an older person's house and the TV's on? It is up like 14.
That would be evidence of someone who has a hard time hearing.
Dan, it's my house, too.
It does kind of correlate.
I mean, but quantity of talking does not equal hard of hearing. Volume of talking does.
Which was only one of the issues.
He indicated volume.
No, he says they ramp up their volume to dominate the conversation.
Here's the deal. My guess is that this is on it. Like, if he's painted this as a broad cultural issue, there's something about how he communicates that seems very that I don't think is inserts himself into a conversation, and so people do talk over him. Because, like, you can find a domineering guy here and there, but, like, you don't tend to find huge groups of them because,
like, everyone in their 60s?
Domineering people don't tend to hang about in groups because they get out-domineered.
Right.
They want to domineer other people in a conversation. And so, like, you don't see 10 of them all in an area. So if he thinks it's a broad cultural problem, if everyone else is to blame, he's actually probably
to
blame.
That ain't no doubt. You never see Tony Robbins and friends. You know what I'm saying? It's only Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
He shows up on his own.
Yeah, that's something about how this guy communicates. It makes it easy for him to be communicated over naturally. And so I think it's less likely that he's around a bunch of domineering guys and that there's some meekness in how he's communicating. Or, like, he expects people to stop and ask him an opinion. And, like, it doesn't happen, and so he feels like he's being interrupted.
So if he was more assertive, then he probably wouldn't even be asking us?
That would be my guess, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Secular says, I do have a suggestion. Avoid people like this. Everyone in their 60s.
Avoid the entirety of that decade.
If you can't avoid them, politely excuse yourself as quickly as possible. These people are sappers, in quotations, and it is not unusual for them to drain others of energy, leaving them feeling tired, overloaded, and trapped, as you have described. Like an alien succubus. Within a few minutes of getting away, you will start feeling better. Try it, and you'll see.
So basically, have plagued every Walmart greeter and make a run for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how these old folks' homes even survive with a bunch of, I don't know, scorpions running around all the time. Just stingraying everybody.
It just isn't my experience. All right, you've been listening to Life in the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. If you have thoughts on the show, shoot us an email at info@lifeinthepath.org. Make sure you check it out next week. Silverside is going to be in studio. Pick up their new album before you get on the show so you can enjoy them that much more.
Called Casting Shadows.
Check us out during the week at lifeinthepath.org for past clips. And be faithful in the means. God will take care of the ends. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path. We don't show the love we know. Deep inside our soul.